Hey guys, it's Carlos Garcia with the Behind the Stick podcast. In this episode, I had the chance to interview Annie Montgomery. She's an amazing bartender out of Denver, Colorado. This episode, she talks about the time she's had a wine glass thrown at her, the difference between learning and failure, how to deal with the competition nerves, as well as an all-female guest bartending series that her work is doing. Enjoy. All right, so I am here with Annie Montgomery. She is a close friend that I met from the bartending community. I have met her down in Denver at multiple events and stuff, so she has the opportunity today to come guest bartend with us, which is going to be really fun. So I'll let her talk a little bit about herself. So Annie, why don't you introduce yourself, where you work, and where you're from?
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Carlos. Like you said, my name is Annie Montgomery. I work at Zeppelin Station at our two bars, Big Trouble and Kiss and Ride. Originally, I'm from Arizona. I moved to Colorado a couple of years ago.
What brought you out here?
If I'm being honest.
Yeah, be honest.
I got divorced, and I was like, fuck this place. So, no, really. It was time for a change. It was that time in my life when I was ready to move on and try something different. So I picked up what little stuff I had and drove to Colorado. And I've been here ever since.
Nice. Were you bartending in Arizona?
I was. I've been bartending since I was 22-ish, so a little over 10 years.
Okay, nice. What brought you into the bartending career?
I think with a lot of us, it starts with like some shit job at some shit place. just because you're trying to make some money for the summer. For me, I got a job really young, just, you know, slinging hamburgers and milkshakes, and then kind of kept that through college and high school just to kind of make a little bit of money. And then somewhere around that same time when I started bartending, I fell in love with it, so I stayed with it ever since.
What was this place called?
The one I fell in love with, or
yeah,
the one I hated?
The one you fell in love with? either are, whichever one's you
no,
want.
No, so I started working for P.F. Chang's, like right as P.F. Chang's started to like really ramp up.
Really?
And that was like one of the first, like, oh my god, like I can't believe if you got this job, like you were the best server in town type thing. So I got a job with P.F. Chang's. I actually moved up to Phoenix to get this job because I wanted it so bad. And then was able to get the job, but then had to transfer back down to Tucson. So, and I stayed with that company for 7 years. I learned the ins and outs of all of their training programs and every part of every job. And, yeah, just stayed with them for a really long time.
So if you went to go work there again, you could pick it right back up, is what you're saying?
I would probably run circles around those kids right now.
P.F. Chang's.
But yes,
Pro.
I probably could, yeah.
That's awesome. Where did you start bartending there?
Yeah, so that was the first place I started bartending. I was their like lead server for a long time and really was trying to push my way into the bar because I really admired the bartenders, especially then. They had a lot of knowledge about things I didn't understand, mostly in a spirits kind of aspect. And wine, especially, too. And, like, I knew enough about beers. I'd been drinking beers for a long enough time and really just wanted to learn and kind of didn't even understand that you could create cocktails at that time. That wasn't even on my radar for another, like, 8 years. But it was more just about, like, learning the basics of what makes a good drink and something that's gonna pair well with whatever you're eating.
Okay, so that kind of motivated you to figure that out more and dive into that matching, pairing, balance, all that?
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't even until, well, I did a short stint. After I did P.F. Chang's and kind of did the corporate thing, I moved into volume bartending for a long time. So I just moved in straight into like PBRs and pink drinks. Like, and I stayed with that for a long time and then kind of like made my way back into figuring out why I love the hospitality industry and creating and
What was one crazy story when you started bartending?
The first one that came to mind was my first trainer when I first started to learn to bartend. He would stand behind me and just say, judging, 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 I'm judging you right now. So I kind of feel the same way now with a lot of other people. I wouldn't say that's the craziest story. I mean, I've worked in a lot of bars. I've worked in high-end places where women have thrown wine glasses. I've worked in low-end places where people have you know, pissed and are safe. Like, I've seen a lot of crazy things, but I've never really, it doesn't surprise me anymore. Nothing can really surprise me
You're
anymore.
Numb to everything now.
Not entirely numb, but it's just like, okay, that's a new one. Like, I'm not surprised, but yeah.
When you first got started, what were some of the obstacles that you had to overcome at the beginning of your career?
I think a lot of it was, I really wanted to move up and grow, but I get really good at a certain skill pretty fast, and it's that curse of being, you know, what's the saying?
I don't know the saying, but I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah, it's like, it's because you're so good at something, they won't let you move into another position. So it's, I mean, I was irreplaceable in some aspects, so they wouldn't kind of let me go into other, you know, because no one else could handle a 10-table section at 22 years old, you know, and, like, managers trusted me. And I don't even say that that's an obstacle, like, it's kind of a badge of honor, but at the same time, I could say the whole, like, women thing, but that's not even really a thing anymore, I don't think. I think it really comes down to value. What I don't like now, especially, is playing the politics game with people around me or just certain situations. I've learned how to talk to people, and for better or worse. So I think the important thing to learn there for me was to be able to train my replacement. So to be able to continue to cultivate and let other people grow in the same kind of path that you're on, so that when you come up to that, you should always have two people. Like, you should have at least a mentor or a teacher, and then someone who is your project, someone who that you're training to either replace you, I wouldn't even say replace you, but to do the thing that you're doing in case you're not there that day, so that there is not one point of failure. Yeah.
When you first got started, was there a big failure that stuck out in your head, and what happened?
I don't really like to think about anything as failures. I think there's a lot of opportunity. I've made a lot of mistakes. I've spilled wine on new dresses. I've spilled entire pitchers of iced tea on tables. Like, I don't necessarily think that I've failed at a lot of things, but I've definitely learned a lot. I think it's important for me, especially, and I don't know about anyone else that is listening to this, but, like, I can't think about that word. Just because it's so inhibiting in a lot of ways, because I don't think of anything as a failure, but more of either an opportunity or a missed opportunity, and then learn from that.
What is some advice you would give to someone trying to get in that mindset of, okay, I messed up, how do I get over it now? I messed up. How do you teach someone to get in that mindset?
It's a lot easier when you're faced with that person day to day. For me, when I am in a conversation with someone who, and I think a lot of us are like this, especially in the bartending community, where there's so much harder on ourselves than anyone else, because we do hold ourselves to a higher standard than a lot of other people. And because it's such a fast pace, and, like, you have to be able to pay attention to the minutiae and also, like, the psychology and sociology of what's happening around you. So, that being said, if I'm ever in a conversation with a friend of mine who's either self-deprecating or is looking at something in a fairly negative way, I try to either offer up a suggestion about how the other side of that coin looks, or just kind of call them out on their delusion entirely.
You're wrong.
Here's why.
Okay, so having a balance of a friendship, mentor, kind of having someone to lean on.
Yeah, because that's been offered to me so many times. I have been so appreciative of the people who have called me on my shit in kind and not so kind ways.
What are ways you're focused on growing your knowledge or skills in order to be a better bartender?
So I'm not very good at reading books, but if I can read small chapters of books that I have an emotional attachment to, or that I can apply directly to my bartending career at the same time, then I'm a much more involved learner. To make a cocktail, I have to touch the bottles. To be a part of a conversation or to kind of throw an event, I have to be a part of that event. I have to be in the space with the people. That's how I remember.
So getting your hands on everything and touching everything and mentally and physically seeing it and being there.
Yes. I think being present is a huge part of it.
I like that. I've never thought about that. Everyone always talks about the books they want to read or that. But I just heard a good joke the other day. It's like, I know how to swim. I read a book about it.
Yeah.
Do you? Like, you've never been in water.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, experience for me has been the best teacher over, especially the last 10 or 15 years. Going back to that question about failure. one of the first cocktail competitions I ever did was an egg white cocktail, which is pretty ambitious for an offsite cocktail event. And it was the second one I'd ever done, so I wasn't thinking about it. And I had all of my ingredients ready. I was the last person to go. I was so nervous that I under-poured for my cocktail. So I only poured for 3 cocktails instead of 4. When I went to go take the squeeze bottle to squeeze my egg whites into my jigger, I hadn't clipped the end off, so I went to go squeeze it and it was entirely like there, nothing was coming out. So I went to go reach for my knife, which is always in my right pocket, but I was wearing a fucking dress. So it was like this combination of events that just happened where I lost complete control over the situation. So I'm like, okay, so you learn to find out where your paring knife is in another person's bar, and then you just keep going. And then when I went to go shake the second time, I forgot to put ice in there, and I just completely fucked the entire competition up. And I could think about that as a failure. Like, I literally, like, there was no possible way I could have won that competition, but for me, I learned a lot. So the next competition that I went to, I was overprepared. I was, like, completely overprepared. So, I mean, it's those experiences, I think, that we have in real life that help us to grow.
Mm-hmm. With helping you to grow, too, were there any mentors when you first started?
So, this is a really interesting question, and I like it a lot because no, not at all. Where I came from, I mean, in Arizona especially, like, we didn't have a lot of mentors, especially, like, for women at that time. The other lady bartenders were, I mean, it was, like, Flo at the, you know, frickin' dive bar down the street that was super old and, like, you know, she didn't really have a lot of, like, other than, like, super sage life advice to give you, or was like the old dude at the same bar. But in terms of like cocktail creation and the bartending community, no, it wasn't until I got to Denver, actually, when I met Topher. So like in terms of mentorship, Topher was absolutely the first person that I met ever in my life that took me on like as a project and as a friend. Is probably one of the only reasons I'm still in Denver today. He was so welcoming and so eager to have someone that wanted to learn and to teach them and to show them around to other bartending events. He got me into cocktail competitions. He introduced me to you. I mean, he's a freaking phenomenal person. Since then, I mean, I've had the opportunity to meet so many other people, and like my mentors now are pretty much everyone in the bartending community, but specifically like the people that I work with now. They have such a wealth of knowledge. So, like, Lana and Michael and Justin just have so much fucking knowledge and, like, and in different aspects. And it's not just about cocktail creation or being a somm or any of that kind of any one particular area. I learned so much about event prep and, like, science. You know, Lana has a pastry background. And Michael loves to cook, and Justin's thrown huge events. So it's like I get this kind of myriad of just so much knowledge that I'm surrounded by all the time. And I could not be happier.
Nice. How would you advise someone to overcome that burnout? Because, again, we talk about this in this industry all the time. That's super plagued with burnout, our wear and tear, our high turnover. What are ways you overcame that?
Sure. Balance, you know. And it's hard for me to even say that word because I love to work. I'm a nurturer, and I mean, you couple that with a couple, you know, with our desire to kind of please people or do what we do and a love for hospitality, then that balance kind of gets thrown out the window. You know, I go to work because I love what I do. I don't go to work because I have to. You know, I'll work 80-hour weeks because I want to be at those places. I want to see my regulars. I want to be involved in their stories. So for me, it's like I have to kind of swing the other way when I have to really tell myself to, like, no, bro, like, you need to take a day off or even a morning and just, you know, drive up into the mountains and see how pretty it is. Even just, like, a couple hours, or just go get a pedicure, or for me, it's, like, cuddling with my dog or taking a walk or going swimming or even just getting to the gym. And it doesn't have to be consistent, because I think if we're so rigid about – so if we have a stranglehold on being so good to ourselves and, you know, like, trying to take care of ourselves, then we kind of lose the point. So I try to do everything in moderation, including moderation.
Moderation in moderation.
Yeah.
It's the next tattoo we get.
Yeah.
Moderation in moderation.
Yeah.
Do it in Italian or something. I don't even know how cool that would sound.
That would probably sound like the most amazing thing ever. And I'm going to look it up right now.
All right. Look that up. All right. So tell us what you found. What language and what is the
so
tattoo?
So in Dutch, and I'm totally going to butcher this, moderation in moderation translates to... Moderite met mate.
Oh, I found in Polish that I can't even read. Umanamzi umari.
That's the one. That's the one. Because no one's going to be able to read it anyway.
It's like every letter of the alphabet. As you keep growing, what keeps you motivated and driven? What inspires you as a bartender?
I've always found that with teaching others, you get way more out of it than you put into it. It's like someone will hear what you're saying, but like the satisfaction of getting to watch someone, it's not even walking your footsteps, because I don't even think that my footsteps are that big, you know, like, but to create their own, like that's where I want to be. Like I don't want to be the next big bartender, but I want to be like friends and have involvement with the people that do.
You don't want to be the guy winning the MVP. You want to be the guy that...
I want to give him a high five.
You want to be the guy who gives the shout out.
I want to be the one where he's got like a half a shoulder on the side and he's completely cut out of the picture. Excuse me. She's completely cut out of the picture, but like, you know, I'm still there having beers with them when they're done.
And you're in their motivation speech like, I couldn't have done it with X,
you know
Y,
who
Z.
You are. I want to be that girl. You know who you are.
By working with other people and pushing people to their limit, that's what kind of keeps you motivated.
Yeah, and I mean, always the guests. This is why I do what I do, because I love making people happier, being a part of their day, even if it's the introverted person at the end of the bar, which is usually me after I'm done with my shift and don't really want to be talked to or kind of just be let alone and just enjoy a quiet night. Like, I got you, bro, and I also got this other guy over here that wants to talk, you know, and like tell me about their kids, or, you know, I just want to be there and be a good person. I think we just need to stop being shitty to each other.
And you talked a little bit earlier about how there was times where you were getting that burnout. It was all about surrounding yourself with good people and surrounding yourself in learning.
Yeah. I mean, the burnout came... It doesn't come anymore. The burnout came when I wasn't being pushed. And I think that's true for a lot of people. When you kind of reach a plateau, or what you think is a plateau, then we get bored, especially in this industry, right? I mean, we're constantly moving. We're constantly trying new things. We're trying to be the next biggest thing, or we're trying to at least keep it exciting and creative, right? So if that's stifled in any way, or if it's not provided as an opportunity, then that for me is when I know that I need to look for something.
So just pushing, push.
Yeah.
And that's how you would you advise that for anyone who's in that moment of like, maybe this isn't for me, or I can't do this?
So, no. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't, because there's some people that this industry just isn't going to make happy. They're just not happy. They don't like what they're doing, or it's not a good fit, and I would advise those people to move on, honestly. I don't think that... We used to talk a lot about like how this was kind of what we were doing to get to our next job. I don't want to be around those people anymore. I'm fucking tired of it. I am. I just, you know, I mean, if this isn't the job for you for the rest of your life, like, fucking own it. We get up every day and, like, find something good about it. And then if you absolutely can't, then you need to walk away. I don't think it translates well to the guests or your coworkers. It's kind of a downer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So in the Arizona, when you started feeling that burnout, how did you overcome that then?
I quit.
You quit? Oh, yeah.
No, I went to a different job, honestly, because it got to a point where I wasn't being challenged enough.
What are some of the ways you are pushing the envelope now and developing new ideas?
Sure. So, especially within the last couple of years, I've really been trying to think about my bartending career in a different way. I think about it more in a sociological aspect, I guess, is like, why are people going to these bars and why are they not going to these bars? And what about this place makes it so special that people want to go there? And mostly it's the people. a lot of it is the industry people that work there. So I've been really trying to focus on that and create good relationships with just being one of the new girls in town, you know. Started off in the mountains. So I've only really been in Denver since September, so 6 months or 8 months or whatever. For me, it's become less about bartending and being more of a person, which I think a lot of us lose after a while.
Is there any cocktails you're working on? Any crazy things you want to share with the world?
I really love what we're doing at Zeppelin. We have a ladies guest bartender series that we do, and it's just fucking phenomenal just to like see the amount of support that we get. So it's run by women. It's the bartenders are always women. The entertainment is always female. Most of the proceeds go to benefit the gathering place or like some other female centric or woman centric nonprofit that needs our support. And just to watch that grow over the last couple of months has been really, really cool. Just to see how people can come together in a space. In terms of cocktail creation, I have the things that I like, and now like having gone like swung my pendulum one way where I've gone crazy, crazy off the lighting shit on fire and smoking it and molecular this and all that stuff. I've really just kind of come back to not even reinventing the classics, but taking ingredients that are solid to begin with and then mixing them with other ingredients that are solid to begin with.
And then backtrack a little bit about the series you guys are doing it. You gave us little snippets. Can you give us like a full rundown of everything?
We invite other female bartenders to come in once a month, kind of to play off of our time of the month type thing. So it kind of mirrors that. It really is just to support other women and bring other women into our space and like give them kind of the props that they deserve. Like the first round that we had, we did Ana Marie Segoy from Williams and Graham, who's now with Bombay Sapphire, and we did Minetta out of St. Ellie, who now has her own place, Lady Jane. And just to see them kind of walk and move in a high volume and a high level in that space was really amazing. And then the second event we did, we had Alex Jump, who manages Death & Co. in Denver, and Valerie Alvarado, who also is from Williams & Graham. And just, again, to watch those ladies in that space just fucking sling, dude. Like, they're fast. They're fast, and they're so knowledgeable. Even in a new space, it was just, you get to that point sometimes in your career where you're just like, I don't, like, can anyone move fast at all ever again? Like, these people are not... No, these ladies can fucking hustle. It's cool. And then the next one we're doing a round of chefs. And then after that, we'll reach out nationally. And we're trying to get some other nonprofits involved. I'd like to do the Roseandum Center, which is a center basically in Denver where you can... It's a one-stop shop for sexual abuse or violence. You can go in, or any lady can go in and get a restraining order, a place to stay. She can get support, whatever she needs. She can find a place for her children. You know, I think it's just really important that, without being exclusive of men, because I don't think that's helpful either, but that especially women, instead of doing the like side eye or the, you know, we're judging each other. Like, again, it goes back to that idea of just don't be shitty to each other. Like, it's not male exclusive, but we're here to support women in Denver and outside as best we can.
What's it called, the guest bartending
space? Yeah, so the name of the bar is called Big Trouble, and the name of the event is called Big Trouble in Little China.
Some more female puns in play.
Yeah, badanching. Yeah, no, so we had some branding stuff, and like the t-shirt is kind of plays off of the Jaws theme, so it's the great white shark head is coming up, and there's a lady with free-flowing, I would say. She's swimming around in the ocean. She's very much a target, I would say.
Yeah. We'll post a picture. We'll get that shown so everyone can see it.
Awesome.
When you're behind the bar, what is your number one rule?
For myself or for other people?
Just any, both.
Never stop moving. And also, if I could tell another bartender anything ever, I would probably tell them it's not fucking about you. It's about the guests. And I don't care if they want a tomato in it, or if they want a blue cheese olive, or if they want a sex on the beach. You just make the best version of that you can, because it's going to make your guest happy. Put your fucking ego aside. I don't want to see it. It doesn't look good on you. generally. I mean, sometimes it does. But I think that we've gone past that era of I know everything bartending, you know? And or I have to act a certain way, or I have to know more than you. It's just really off-putting. And I've walked out of bars before for that reason, just because it's not a good experience for me, which means it's not a good experience for your guests.
You talked about not calling it failure. So what are some obstacles recently that you overcame, and how did you do that?
Personally or in the bartending community?
Both. That's fine.
But no, I mean, with bartending, I think you get a lot of different personalities that you work with on a daily basis. So without being manipulative, I think I come from a place of just really genuinely wanting to help a lot of people. And sometimes that comes off as either I'm taking on too much of someone else's position, or it becomes this like, someone thinks that I'm trying to like take advantage of them, or so I've really had to learn how to dial that back, which is hard for me. I want to be that person that when my manager is carrying, or anyone above me who is carrying a box or a tray or something like that, is like, I want to take it from them, because that's what I've been conditioned to do. Or if they have a load that's way too heavy, you know, I want to help them with that. I think it used to be that I had a hard time asking for help. Now I have a hard time letting other people not ask for help until they're ready, which has been hard, because you see someone drowning and like you want to tell them like, you know, I've got your back, I've got your back, I've got your back. But until they ask you like for help, like what do you, they'll probably even push you away to a point where it's not helpful for anyone. And yeah, just making it fucking great every day.
Yeah, that's what we got. That's what we're here for, to do that. And then with that plan, where do you see that in going in about 5 to 10 years? Or where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, wherever that takes me.
Kind of rolling with the flow.
Yeah, I mean, I've like I said, like distilling is on my list. Like brewing is on my list. I don't know, knitting.
So you're saying
I definitely don't see myself as like a cat lady, like with 15 cats, like living in the woods somewhere in 5 or 10 years, or even kind of like retired. But like, I just want to, I don't know, maybe it's New York, maybe it's Chicago, maybe it's San Francisco, like, or I mean, maybe it is on the road all the time, like talking to other people about, oh my God, no, that sounds terrifying. No, I don't want to do that at all. I'm really like an extrovert and introvert. So I need my alone time. But I don't know, wherever that takes me. I mean, not that I don't have like goals for myself, but just kind of leaving it open for whatever happens. I mean, that decision brought me to Denver, and those decisions kind of took me around Denver and really introduced me to some great people and some great experiences. So I think you just go with that. It seems to be working.
Oh, yeah. How do you think the bartending scene will change in the near future?
I think there's going to be a huge humbling. I think moving away from the people or the ideas that we're better than everyone else has to change, because our guests, the consumers, pretty much the public is just kind of fucking over it. I think there's also going to be, because we're so in need of staffing right now, especially in Denver, we're getting a lot of young and hungry people, but also we're getting a lot of people who don't really want to be doing what they're doing, which is great. I want to send them along their way with the best of all of the information that I can give them to a career that they want and love and would really thrive in. So I think the ones that stick around, especially in the next 5 or 10 years, are going to be really good.
Okay. with them growing, those people growing, what do you think the next big trend will be?
I'm really hoping that we get to bring back all those shitty shots from, like, the early 2000s. Like, the brain hemorrhage, you remember that one? And the sex with an alligator? And, like I want to bring back the crap stuff. Because I think there's a lot of value in it. And also, it goes back to that kind of, like, humbling. Like, yeah, you can make, you know, a $1,500 cocktail, you know, with some really rare Amaros or something, and, like, maybe one person will buy it. Or you can make a really, really good shitty vodka drink and sell 1,500 of them. I mean, it depends on where you want to go. Like, I just want people to have a good time.
You just want to see the weird all shots.
I want to light up Jaeger bombs for days.
If you were to, this one's my favorite question to ask. If you were to have a drink with anyone throughout time, who would it be, what drink would it be, and why?
One is my grandpa. We would have Canadian Club with a splash of water and a twist of lemon on the couch in his home right before he died. He flew in World War II in Vietnam. And his name was God Bob.
God Bob?
God Bob, because my grandma used to always yell at him, and she'd go, God Bob! So he became God Bob, but he also, like, he knew fucking a lot of shit, and I was way too young when he died to really kind of glean all of that information and knowledge off of him. But, like, he would stick his leg over his lazy boy, and he would raise his arm up in the air like this, and like, that's when you knew that God Bob, Grandpa God Bob was going to tell a story, and you just listened. And every single night, they would have Canadian Club and water, and they grew their own lemons so that they could have their own lemon twists. And I wanted more, I think, from that relationship. I don't know, there's so many. I mean, a couple of other people that come to mind now, I think with the current climate, is like Petrosky, you know, Bourdain, anyone else that is, like, suffering from some kind of depression that we don't know about or is unwilling to talk about or hides it really well. I mean, a lot of us do. I think there's value in telling all of those people, myself included, you're not alone. But to what extent, you know? I mean, it's that same thing, like, you have to let someone reach out for help. And that's been on my mind a lot lately, especially. Petrosky, I don't know if you've read his book, but it was the only one that I had an emotional connection to. Just because, like, he really fucking cared, you know? Down to, like, the minutiae of Ice Cube. It's not even a minute deal, like, but just really putting so much care and thought and attention into every single detail has really changed my bartending, especially over the last, like, year or so.
Which book is this again?
Sasha Petrosky's Regarding Cocktails. You should read it. It's good. The illustrations are fucking amazing. Yeah, and then probably Souther, because of his intense love for Amaro. And I'm sure he has some really cool age shit that I would like to try. Yeah. Some old ass shit. Yeah, so we'd probably drink some old ferments. I would hope.
Old Fernet.
If he would share them with me. I would very much like that.
Yeah, well, that's all I have. Is there anything else you want to say to anyone, give a shout out or thank you or any passing words before we go work our guest bartending shift?
Oh, man. Let's fucking kill it. Huh?
Cool. Well, thank you, Annie. Thank you guys for listening and have a good time. Good night. Good day. Whatever you're having while you're listening to this.
Just have a good day. Don't be shitty to each other.
Don't be shitty. That is the end of this episode. Thank you. Hope you enjoyed it. If you want to reach out to us with any questions, comment, concerns, feel free to at our website, behindthestickpodcast.com, or our Instagram at behindthestickpodcast. Facebook is the same, or even my personal Instagram at Carlos the Creative. Have a good one. Bye.